Are you obsessed with Los Angeles? Head over heels in love with the City of Angels? Well, this is the podcast for you. At LifeHacks LA, we hack the best in arts, eats, and activities in Los Angeles. So join us and become an LA hacker. Baby, baby. Hey, what's up, LA Hacker? This is Stefan, and welcome to another episode of the LifeHacks LA podcast. I got a quick question for you. If you are from Los Angeles or you've lived here a long time, have you ever noticed that people tend to hate on LA? You know, like you might have family or friends that come to visit and they focus on the traffic or everyone being Hollywood or whatever preconceived notion that they have. Well, I've dealt with that a lot, and it's really kind of annoying, and especially when a lot of these myths that people have or their reasons for hating on LA aren't even necessarily true. That's why we've got a really cool episode for you today, because I brought on the authors of the book This Is Not LA, and the authors' names are Jen Billick and Kate Sullivan, and basically they just give us an insider's take on the real Los Angeles, and they debunk all these cliches and crush the haters and smash some of these myths that people have about LA. So the next time you got a family or friend visiting you from out of town and they start to hate on LA, you can use some of the ammunition from this podcast to set them straight. All right, guys, let's jump into the episode. Hey, what's up, LA hackers? Welcome to another episode of the LifeHacks LA podcast. We've got a pretty awesome episode for you today because we're going to do something a little different. Instead of hacking a certain LA neighborhood or area or activity, we're going to get into hacking the myths of Los Angeles. And to do that, I have two special guests on, and they wrote the book, This Is Not LA. And it basically dispels all those annoying myths and rumors that we all have to deal with living in Los Angeles. So I'd like to welcome to the podcast, Jen Billick and Kate Sullivan. How are you guys doing today?
Good. So happy to be here.
Yes, super happy.
Awesome. Awesome. It's great to have you guys on. Like I was telling you before we started recording, your book is pretty awesome, and we'll get into it a little bit later. But first, we just want to know a little bit more about you guys. So we'll start with Jen. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to Los Angeles?
Absolutely. One of the things that really worked about the book, writing the book with Kate, is that she's a native and I am a transplant. So we had those, you know, individual and sort of important points of view, which informed, you know, sort of how we approached and discussed the material for the book. I grew up in Northern California in Berkeley. And in Northern California, especially when I was growing up in the 70s and the 80s, Los Angeles was greatly looked down upon. It was, you know, an intellectual wasteland. It was materialistic. It was absorbing or using all of the resources. And we just had nothing but contempt for Southern California. And my grandparents lived in the valley, and not a great part of the valley at the time, Sylmar, in a trailer park on the freeway. And when I would visit them, we would just go to amusement parks and malls. And so it really reinforced my views of Los Angeles. And then I moved to New York after college. And New York is the other place that, of course, looks down upon Los Angeles terribly. One of my theories is that the Bay Area has an inferiority complex about Los Angeles, and New York has a superiority complex about Los Angeles. And I actually was working on a book with I was a book editor, and I was working on a book with the Chateau Marmont, and also had some friends who were starting to live here. So I started coming to Los Angeles and experiencing a whole different side of LA and realizing how interesting and deep and multi-layered and rich it was. And that is what brought me to Los Angeles in 1998.
Okay, so Kate, does that make her an Angeleno?
Oh, for sure.
Okay, okay. Because, you know, people who are born in LA, they're a little particular with who's considered a true Angeleno or not.
Are they?
Yeah, no, they are. So. My husband is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. I guess it's true. Like, you don't, when you grow up here, you do feel like a unicorn, and people are like, wow, you're actually from here. And
so now over 50% of Los Angeles has been born here.
Yeah. So I don't even know why people still say that. I guess because so many people still do come here.
And it's a myth.
And it is a myth.
One of the myths.
It is a
myth. Nobody's from here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Well, a lot of the myths I actually think I bought into, maybe like that one, because you are told it so often growing up here. So I grew up here in LA. I grew up in the middle of the city, and my parents moved here from elsewhere, the Midwest and the East Coast. My dad was they were living in New York before they moved here in New York City. And my dad was like an aspiring theater critic at the New York Times, and he was offered a job at the LA Times, and this was like 1968 or something. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'm gonna do it. And everyone was like, what? LA is it's a total wasteland. It's a cultural wasteland. You're throwing your career away. Why would you go to LA? There's no theater out there. There's nothing. And he was like, you guys are wrong. It's cool. Something's cool out there. I'm going to go, you know? And so they moved out here, and they were like, New York is totally, the East Coast in general is overrated, I think, maybe a bit. And let's see what's happening out here. And so I grew up in this weird little family of like sort of, well, they're intellectuals, and their friends were really smart and intellectuals and writers. And we went to the theater all the time growing up in the 70s and 80s. And like my mom was writing novels, and like it was really like a normal street I lived on, full of kids. Like it was like a nice sort of suburban atmosphere in the middle of the city. And it was very kind of, in some ways, very just regular.
When you say the middle of the city, are you talking about like mid-city, or are you talking about Hollywood,
yeah,
downtown? Or
So I grew up in a part of Koreatown that now has a name. It never had a name. It's called Wilton Park.
Oh, okay.
And it's near like Wilton and 8th Street.
North Koreatown.
It's like, yeah, it's like Koreatown's moved around a few times, but it's a little pocket of just south of Hancock Park. It's not rich. Well, now it's rich, but it wasn't. We were going
But everywhere out. Is now.
Yeah. So. And so it was like basically equidistant from, you know, downtown to Hollywood to, it was like sort of in the middle of everything. And I went to high school in Hollywood at Immaculate Heart.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, well. And I've lived elsewhere. I lived in Northern California. I went to UC Santa Cruz. I lived in Minneapolis for 4 years, which I adore. I lived in Prague for 3 years. So I've lived other places and had the opportunity to compare LA to other places. And so I do have some kind of perspective on it now. And LA has matured so much in the past 20 years.
That's another thing we really came across in the myths, that so many of them were outdated. And somebody coming to Los Angeles now, that might not be their experience. We sort of looked at it with a few different categories of myths. There were things that were never true, like LA is a desert. Things that used to be true but are no longer true, like LA has, you know, terrible smog and atmosphere. And things, what, there's two other categories.
Things that were, things that were a little bit true.
Oh yeah, things that were a little bit true, but less so than other cities. So why did New York get the bad rap? Like, we don't even have the worst traffic by a lot of the actual data in the city. We rank, you know, certainly in the top 10 for a lot, and in the top 5 for a lot of metrics, but we're not number 1 for a lot of the traffic commuting metrics. And then the last one was sort of a category of myths that were true but were awesome, not negative. It wasn't actually a full-on category, but we would tack it on sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. LA is full of freaks and flakes. Well, no, it's not, but the freaks and flakes we do have are pretty great. And we brought, you know, our freaks and flakes brought you yoga and meditation.
That are mainstream now, right?
And sushi and vegetarianism. Sure. And, yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, we'll talk about the book a little bit later in the interview, but this is kind of like a general question, so don't feel like you have to get into detail, just kind of like on a high level, because it's such a broad question. But in general, what is it that you love about living in Los Angeles?
There's so much that I love, this is Jen, about living in Los Angeles. I think number one is that you can live a pretty comfortable, like Kate said, sort of suburban life. The suburban has bad connotations. You can live really well in a big city. You know, you can live in a house or in a neighborhood where everybody, you know, isn't on top of one another, and yet have access to all of the things that a great, you know, a city that's great on a global scale can offer. And choices about where you want to live and how you want to live, you know, depending on your choice of neighborhood. And so many of the neighborhoods that I have lived in Los Angeles are highly walkable, which is another myth about Los Angeles. I also really love the access to nature, to the mountains and to the beach. And people think of like the Bay Area as more beautiful than Los Angeles, but I actually find access to nature in the Bay Area to be a little bit more challenging. And you have to sort of go through choke points, which on the weekends are really choked. And they're just the Santa Monica Mountains and the San Gabriel Mountains, and then of course the beach are, you know, these ginormous opportunities for hiking and nature.
Yeah, it's amazing to have it all right there. What about you, Kate? What are some of your favorite things about it, Los Angeles in general?
I totally agree with Jen on everything she said. I think for me, the most important thing is the diversity. And I went to Portland recently, and Portland's a great city. I love Portland, right? But my God, it is only white people pretty much. I mean, it is extremely not diverse.
And yeah, I'm from Seattle, so it's kind of like Portland.
Okay. That limits it. I really think that limits a place when it's that homogenous. It just, something doesn't feel right to me about it. And I guess that just comes from growing up where it is like super, super crazy diverse. It feels somehow, I don't know, like you're more connected to the globe, to the world. There's all just the sort of silly benefits of like being able to eat any kind of cuisine you want and get a Korean massage and then have Japanese sushi and then, you know, all that stuff.
Korean massages really rock.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, something about just the, I would say ultimately it's the diversity that makes this place so amazing and
vibrant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, just having access to all these different cultures. And like you said, Korean spa, I mean, that's an experience. You don't even know what a spa day is until you do a Korean spa. And you probably wouldn't even know that if you lived in another city, you know?
Totally. I don't think they have them in Peoria.
But they'd be lucky if they did.
They would. You know? They would. I hope they do.
Okay, so let's go to my next question. This is one of my favorite questions to ask people that come on the podcast. First, start off by answering where you live currently, and then I'd like you to get into what your perfect day in Los Angeles is. Like, if you could imagine a Saturday or a Sunday where you don't have to work, from getting up in the morning to going to bed at night, what you would do in your neighborhood or in Los Angeles that would make up the perfect ideal day for you.
I live in Mar Vista on the west side, where I always say has neither Mar nor Vista. And that's been for the last year and a half. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I lived in Beechwood Canyon in Hollywood. And then in 2000, I moved to Venice. And I lived in Venice basically from 2000 to 2018 with a brief other time in Mar Vista, but our offices were in Venice for 16 years. So I've really been a Venetian in the time that I have lived in Los Angeles, which, as you know, is kind of its own thing. And, you know, Venice, of course, has changed quite a lot. It's probably gentrified the most of any neighborhood that I can think of. And it now feels like a town called Instagram. And that's part of why I left, you know, that and the scooter danger. What I loved in Venice was my 5-block walk to the beach. And I've had dogs the whole time, and, you know, just every night walking to the sunset, with the dogs to the beach. And, also, you know, being able just to pretty much walk everywhere since my office was so nearby. Abbot Kinney, the main street there in Venice, you know, had so much for me. So, you know, it's sad to, you know, I'm excited to move on to other parts of my life, but it's certainly sad that you can't really go back to it and that it has changed in character so much. So I live in Mar Vista on the West Side. You know, Kate and I were talking before the interview about what is our favorite day. And we're like, well, staying at home, because we're both homebodies. But sometimes we go out, and I think we go out, you know, walking somewhere for brunch, as well as the farmer's market. In Mar Vista, we have a great Sunday farmer's market, and it's just, it's like the perfect farmer's market. It's the perfect size. It's the perfect, you know, ratio of produce to crepes. And, you know, you see people from your neighborhood, and it like just sort of sets the week off right, because I get really good food ingredients. And then I do, you know, sort of food prep and meal prep from that on Sunday for the rest of the week. Last night, actually, my husband and I rode our bikes to Venice, and we actually went to the Drum Circle on the beach, and which I love. And for the first time I danced in the Drum Circle. Awesome. And I finally got over my self-consciousness, and we even brought instruments. You know, so I Sunday nights have always been about Venice Beach for me. And, you know, there are fewer tourists there. There's always the Drum Circle. You get the sunset. So I, you know, in Venice, I just did a lot of walking around.
Oh, that's cool. And I think Mar Vista is kind of a underrated neighborhood. Most people don't, outside of the area, don't really know about it or talk about it.
Totally agree. And I lived there from 2004 to 2010, but maintained our offices in Venice, so that connection. But Mar Vista was very different even then, you know, just because of the gentrification that's taken place across the West Side. And it's now got a lot of the things that, you know, people would want in a more rich neighborhood. Rich meaning awesome, not wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Kate? What's your perfect day in Los Angeles?
Well, I just want to say I love Venice Beach so much, but the Venice Beach boardwalk like hasn't actually changed that much. The actual boardwalk since like, are we going to say something, Stefan?
Oh no, I was just laughing because I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like one place where you can go and feel like it hasn't really changed that much. And I think that like my favorite places in LA are all places like that, that really, for whatever reason, people protected them, or maybe the laws were protecting them from too much gentrification. So for me, I actually have lived all over. I lived in Hollywood. I've lived in Pasadena. I lived in Echo Park. I lived in Silver Lake. And now I actually live in Long Beach, which obviously isn't the city of LA. So I think I come back to LA a lot. I have a child now, a little boy, and from my childhood. So that would be like Farmers Market, the original Farmers Market at 3rd and Fairfax. Is one place that, because of people really getting up in arms and protecting it, it has not changed that much. You know, when they built the Grove, they wanted to tear down Farmers Market, and everyone was like, hell no. Oh. And we are not doing that.
Thank God.
Thank God. And I mean, obviously,
horrible decision.
I know. And obviously it's changed. They have, you have to pay for parking now, and, you know, they have like gourmet food and stuff, but it really, the vibe is just the same. It's basically like 75-year-old old Jewish men sitting there all day, and it's so great. And I would go there and have like piece of pizza, and from the same pizza place, I've always gotten pizza, and go there, and then I would do a little Fairfax district stuff. Like I might go to Okie Dog, which is like the worst food in the whole world, and I love it so much. You know Okie Dog, right?
I don't know Okie Dog.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had it. I've heard of it.
You've never had it? It's the best hangover food ever. Okay, so it's this like stand that's been there forever. And there's one like on South too, but like on Pico and Gray or something, but it's on Fairfax, and it's like a hot dog stand called Okie Dog. And it is insane. The food is insane. It's so gross and so delicious. It's basically a giant flour tortilla with chili and a hot dog and an egg and pastrami.
Oh my God,
that sounds delicious.
It's the best hangover food. And wow. It is delicious. It really is.
Because I always went to Cantor's for hangover food in that neighborhood. Because
well,
that was
really
like,
good too.
You know, like diner food from New York was always the hangover food. But man, that Okie Dog you just described sounds. I'm gonna have to. I don't get hangovers that much anymore. I'm gonna have to get one just to try it.
I know it's kind of worth it just for that. And plus, like the atmosphere of the place is so classic. It's like decorated by like a probably mentally not quite stable. It's like got a really old video game that doesn't work, and like plastic flowers and like clocks and like all these old mismatched chairs, and like it's wonderful. And then I might go to Cantor's, because Cantor's is another place that hasn't changed. It hasn't changed really. And the Kibitz Room, you know, mm-hmm. I might go there. And then I would go to Beverly Hot Springs and get a soak and a scrub. That's actually probably one of my best hacks.
All right, Casey, save that one for later, because I've got some hack questions for you.
Yeah, save it. And then I would work my way east. I would go to Children's Hospital. I know that sounds weird, but my son, when he was born, we spent a lot of time at Children's Hospital, the most magical place in Los Angeles next to Disneyland. It's like they're neck and neck. It's a magical place of pure goodness and love. It's magic.
What do you do when you go there? Now,
well, actually, I haven't really been there since we had to go, so that's why I kind of want to go. Like, I would want to mm-hmm. see the nurses and doctors where we were, but they have a really lovely garden there for children. It's like a sensory garden for children, mm-hmm. And they always have musicians, like young guitar singers playing in the lobby for children, and they have a McDonald's.
That's awesome.
And we used to eat McDonald's when we were like freaking out, and it was just, it's a really good place.
Yeah, I used to work at a children's hospital when I was in high school, and the people who work there, like the doctors and nurses specifically that work at children's hospital, just amazing people, you know?
I know, they are.
They would kind of have to be, it makes sense.
Yeah.
No.
Okay,
but anyway,
let's talk about your book, This Is Not L.A., and I was telling you guys, it really stood out to me because I go through a lot of Los Angeles books, and yours is so unique. And one of the things is that anyone who's lived in Los Angeles for a long time has heard most of these stereotypes. They annoy the heck out of us. But now with this book, you know, you have ammunition to fight back, because you actually go through and give some real facts and dispel some of these LA myths. Can you talk a little bit about why you guys decided to write this book?
The genesis of this book was, in general, I was really surprised at how misunderstood Los Angeles was. I expected it from like my friends in New York, who were like, why would you move there? And my Bay Area friends, who viewed me as a defector. But I was really surprised to see it in, you know, publications of record, like mm-hmm. the New York Times, Vanity Fair, and others, just such egregious and lazy errors in their descriptions of the city. And a friend of mine, who's a writer in Los Angeles, Alyssa Walker, started on her blog this thing called Hater Rating, or Hate Rating, where she started to assign points to articles for, you know, talked about palm trees, 2 points, you know, talked about fake boobs, 3 points, etc. And for some reason that really distilled it for me where I was like, yep, we gotta dispel these, like, and show not only how it's not true, but also show the extent to which it is taken for granted. There are quotes at the beginning of each chapter. Each chapter is a myth that we dispel. There are 18, but there are quotes at the beginning that show how, you know, people in publications that you would think would be better than, you know, they're restating untrue stereotypes about Los Angeles, state them. So there was something in that really motivated me. And it was a long time in development, this book. It's not the kind of book we usually do at Knock Knock, which is a publishing company and gift company. We don't tend to do intensely researched nonfiction. And after doing this book, we understood once again why. It turns out it's really, really hard. But I felt like I wanted it to be my swan song for Los Angeles.
Is this your only book on Los Angeles?
Yes.
Okay. And which of the stereotypes, I mean, like you said, you list 18 of them. Some of them are really common to people. Some of them are a little more under the radar. Out of the stereotypes in the book, which one do you think is most persistent, if you could just pick one, that people who aren't from LA are still clinging on to?
Everybody works in the biz would be mine. And really, I mean, there are numerous measures of it, but, you know, sort of a point that a lot of people agree on is that it's about 5% of Los Angeles at max, and that, you know, industries like healthcare and education and
even manufacturing
and aerospace and manufacturing are, you know, in the double digits.
Yeah.
I mean, I was guilty of that before I moved here, because it seemed like when I would come down, I used to come and visit my brother who moved here way before me. And I would get into conversations with people, and I, you know, a lot of them work in the entertainment industry. And then I would think of it as name dropping, not being from here.
Uh-huh.
But then after I lived here, you know, I used to work for Fox Studios and all these different studios in entertainment. And then I realized it's not really name dropping or bragging. It's they're really just telling you what they do. But when you're out of town, you feel like, you almost feel like they're bragging or something, but they're not, you know, for the most part.
The reason why that myth, like, personally affects me and frustrates me is that when I talk to people who aren't in Los Angeles, they always assume that I am constantly industry adjacent. I mean, if they know what I do, they know I'm not in the industry, but there's this assumption that I'm sort of living in a company town, and my life is governed by that. My life and my friends and the people around me are parts of that company because I live in a company town. And that is not what my life or my friends or my milieu is like at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a friend on Facebook that I hadn't heard from since high school send me a movie script. And I was like, why are you sending me this? And he goes, I thought you could hand it to someone. I'm like, I don't know anybody who could do anything with this.
That's so funny.
Wow.
What is it about writing scripts that make people do things like that?
Apparently he thought like there was producers just walking around the street asking for movie scripts.
Wow. And
I had to break the news to him. But one of the myths I wanted to talk to you about, because it's come up before in this podcast, was the myth about LA having no culture. And especially with the transformation of downtown over the last 10 to 15 years, that seems to really have been dispelled. I mean, with the Broad and just the level that downtown's gotten to over the last 10 years. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, like the transformation of downtown Los Angeles and all the culture that's going on there.
Well, I can talk a little bit about it, but you can too.
I just thought I'd been talking so much that you should talk.
Oh, really? I feel like I was talking too much.
Oh my God. Oh,
totally.
We're too polite.
We're such women,
right?
So downtown, it's weird because I think it you know, it has the highest concentration of historic theaters in the country of any downtown. Historic theaters of anywhere in the country.
Like architecturally significant.
Like the Los Angeles and the UA and the all of them.
Because they've been torn down elsewhere.
Right. Well, also they may have just had more. I don't know.
And you can go on tours of them, which is really cool. Yeah. And not much known or done.
So yeah,
most of them are protected, right? Like landmarks.
Yeah, they are. Thanks to people, you know, making that happen. That wasn't going to happen. But so I think that there's always been, I mean, and having grown up going to a lot of theater, I know there's always been theater and there's always been classical music here. There's always been that thing. And then there was the whole, you know, 1930s, all these great artists and writers and musicians coming over from Eastern Europe to escape the Nazis. So there's always been like high culture.
But those refugees and immigrants actually are a lot of the genesis of the myths about Los Angeles, because they didn't want to be here. And, you know,
some of them did.
Some of them did, would they admit it?
Yeah.
you know, but they first emigrated to New York, which is a city much more on the European model, and they kind of followed their golden handcuffs to Los Angeles. They were, you know, fiction writers who were hired to write screenplays. They were, you know, symphony composers who were hired to do film scores, and all they did was complain about LA at the Chateau Marmont.
Maybe. I'm not sure I agree with that, but I wasn't here. But anyway, so, but yeah, it became this derelict, awful place in the 70s and 80s. And to see it be rehabilitated has not made me sad. Like, I don't feel like a nostalgia for like the scuzzy, you know, smog, like horrible. Every time I would go into downtown as a child to take my dad to work, I would get sick. Like literally sick, because the smog was so intense downtown. I don't miss that. And I feel like there is so much happening in downtown, yet it has retained its kind of scuzzy charm. And so it's kind of at this perfect moment in its history right now, where like the scuzziness level and the cultural level are like at this perfect point.
Sweet spot.
It's at the sweet spot where it hasn't become total Disneyfied whatever. Like maybe you might think Times Square in New York or something.
Yeah, Times Square lost all of its scuzz.
It's at the exact sweet spot. And I think that's, or I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Stefan?
Oh, I was just going to say, I totally agree. I mean, downtown Los Angeles, it's just remarkable. It's probably the hottest spot in Los Angeles right now is downtown.
Yeah,
Arts District, Little Tokyo, the Toy District, I mean, Warehouse District. Amazing restaurants, and coffee shops, and bars. It's unbelievable.
I know, and they're saving the buildings. Although I have to ask you, I used to take my son to Clifton's Cafeteria all the time, and it's a very special place to me. And now it's like a bar, and they closed the restaurant?
Yeah, so it's not open during the day anymore. It's only open at night, but it's pretty incredible. It's pretty spectacular. They actually have a speakeasy bar hidden within Clifton's itself.
Well, that's amazing, but I am pissed off on behalf of all the families.
All the children.
All the children and all the families that would go there on Mother's Day and Christmas and, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you read the story about it, it actually, because I was annoyed too, because I had gone there during the day and I loved it. And I was going to bring my son, who's six. And then I found out that it was about to be, you know, that it was closed during the day. But when I read the backstory, I think they kind of saved it. So the whole thing was going to close down, and then they decided to put some money into it and create that, just the nightlife one. So at least there's something, you know?
Okay.
At least it's still a living thing. Yeah. And living things have to evolve. Your question was about the arts downtown.
Oh, the arts, yeah.
And, you know, Los Angeles didn't always have world-class museums, symphony, you know, bigger theater, and
it did. It has for a long time.
But it has for a long time, and you know, but like people, you know, like
the building of the new symphony hall, you know, the MoCA, you know, be like, it just feels like somehow it all coalesced in the 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, people have a real, there's a bit of snobbery around, does a city have good arts? Because it's really, they're talking about so-called high art or fine art. And we have that, but a lot of what's amazing about creativity in Los Angeles is not that. But if, you know, people are saying that Los Angeles doesn't have it, we certainly have it to prove them happily wrong.
Yeah,
I just had the LA Phil on the last episode, and in my research I found out, which I didn't quite appreciate, is that they're one of the best orchestras in the world. They're right there at Disney Concert Hall, and then they play at another amazing landmark, the Hollywood Bowl. I mean, these are two venues that you can't get anywhere else in the world, right here in LA's backyard, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, the last couple of conductors have just been so extraordinary.
So let me ask you, I want to stay on downtown Los Angeles really quick. So, you know, we talked about how it's transformed over the last 10 years, and it's just made it, it's kind of like the centerpiece of Los Angeles now. But I think part of the problem is most cities don't have much competition. They have their downtown, and that's where everything is. Whereas LA has so many other choices. I mean, you can go to the beach, you can go to Hollywood. So do you think downtown's come far enough to be considered the cultural centerpiece of Los Angeles? Or do you think just by nature of the way LA is, it'll always be dispersed like that?
I'm guessing Kate and I may have different answers on that. I say no. I you know, one of the weird things about LA's downtown is it's not central, and LA's density is at Wilshire in terms of actual population density, and it follows, you know, some of where the original streetcars were, and that's where the different communities and cities and former cities, now neighborhoods, because they joined the city of Los Angeles, are. You know, downtown to me feels like a place apart, and I mean that we can go to anytime. That's amazing, but it doesn't feel to me like a businessy downtown. I don't know. It doesn't feel like a downtown. It doesn't feel like the heart of the city to me. And it doesn't feel representative of the city to me. It's just its own thing. It's its own marvelous thing. But I don't know that having it sort of makes Los Angeles a complete city that it perhaps wasn't when downtown was less rehabilitated and vibrant. I think it's absolutely amazing. It's not the heart of the city to me.
What do you think, Kate?
Well, I mean, I think that you're asking a lot of any downtown in any city to represent the entire city. And I wouldn't know what to say is the heart of Manhattan, for example. I mean, Central Park to me, but you know. So anyway, I guess I do kind of feel like it has earned that place, just given the amount of actual human history that's there, that like pre-colonial history, you know, Yangna, the original, like, really big indigenous native village that was there for who knows how long before the Spaniards came, and then this history of Spanish occupation here, and then the Mexican history, and that is visible in some of the, you know, the buildings and the plaza and Alvera Street. And so I guess I feel like that history, and then the layers on top of layers that is visible, that's been preserved.
It is a crossroads.
Yeah, and then just the fact that, like, crossroads, all the freeways kind of merge there, and then you have like Staples Center, which, as kind of like crass as it is, it's sort of I don't know. There's something important about it. It's crassness in a way, like
it's a real destination point, certainly in terms of its events and popular culture.
Yeah, like it brings sports people to an area that maybe they wouldn't go to otherwise, you know.
Because you to have diversity, you got to have bros.
And then, yeah, and then the big cultural institutions like the Music Center and the Disney Hall and then the courthouses. I guess I would say that, yes, I do. I do feel like it's earned that.
Yeah, I think it's really tough in Los Angeles. The reason why I asked the question is just because in so many other cities, you ask people where to go and everyone says downtown, right?
Yeah. But
when someone comes to visit you in Los Angeles, they say, where do you go? And there's a million choices, right? You can say, go downtown. You could say, go to Hollywood. You could say, go to the beach. You could say, go to the valley. So that's kind of why I like to ask that question, because of all those remarkable changes with downtown, it's still not like the guaranteed go-to by everyone. You know what I mean?
That feature of Los Angeles, I think, is one of the things that contributes to so much of the misunderstanding, which is that it really is an insider city. It's a difficult city to go visit, you know, because where do you go, you know, and how do you understand and penetrate it, you know, whereas cities on the European model, or, you know, like New York, like you just walk out your door and there's the city, you know. And for Los Angeles, I think it can be hard as a first time or second or third time visitor, if you don't know people, to know where to go. You know, I have sort of a tour that I give of Los Angeles when I have friends, you know, come to town, and they're always kind of amazed by how big and broad it is. And also, you know, that they wouldn't have been able to do that on their own.
Yeah, I totally agree. What I do now when people visit me is I segment it. I say, okay, today we're going to go see our downtown tour. And then tomorrow we're going to go see our beach tour. Because I think the mistake a lot of tourists make is they hear about all these places to go, and then they try to go hit them all up in one day. And they're trying to go downtown to Malibu, you know.
That's a good point.
All day in traffic. But
oh, yeah.
All right. So now we're at one of my favorite questions, and that is, your favorite LA hack. So can each of you share with us one or two of your favorite Los Angeles hacks? It could be a favorite activity or some type of LA perk or something that kind of flies under the radar. Whatever is your favorite.
Well, I have a new favorite LA hack, which actually came from the launch party we had for the book was at the Museum of Natural History. And we had a panel discussion about the myths on Los Angeles. And one of the panelists was a writer and author named Linnell George. And we asked, what are your favorite hacks? And hers was Sunday mornings. You can go anywhere in the city without traffic on Sunday mornings. And, you know, it's like my aunt always comes and says, you know, you can get everywhere in 20 minutes, which if I never heard again, wouldn't be too soon, you know? But it has that feeling of what, you know, people who lived in Los Angeles in the 70s describe. Mm-hmm, it's, right. You know, just the, so that has, I really took that to heart. And because I hate driving in traffic, and I've never had a big commute, and I live in walkable neighborhoods. And so I sometimes deny myself the opportunity to go downtown, to go to Hollywood, to go, you know, to, Watts Towers or something. But Sunday morning, you can do anything.
Mm. That's a good one.
That's really good. Really good. I have a few hacks. One hack is if you want to taste like the Sunset Strip, like what that supposedly is, but you don't want to deal with like the cheesy tourist thing, go to the Rainbow Room, the Rainbow Bar and Grill, because the Rainbow Bar and Grill is another place that hasn't changed in, I don't know, 30 years or whatever. Just go there and go to the, in the like back room, they have like a loft, and you have to go up this like creaky staircase, and like there's a loft and you can go up there. And I remember one time, like I went up there and there was this guy smoking, and you're not supposed to smoke, you know? And he was like, I was like, oh, that's cool. You're smoking. He was the manager. And it was like the coolest thing. I just sat there absorbing the vibes. And I'm pretty sure that that's where like Harry Nilsson and John Lennon and Alice Cooper had like a drinking club up there. But anyway, and then the Beverly Hot Springs, if you can't afford like a full spa day thing because they're so expensive, you go to the Beverly Hot Springs and get a body scrub, I think it's called. It's like, it seems expensive, but it's like basically getting a massage without paying for a massage, and you get the entrance fee covered also. So it actually ends up being not that expensive, really.
Is it actually a hot springs?
It is an actual hot springs. The you know that, right?
I forgot.
Okay, yeah. It's artesian hot springs, and the waters are silky. Mm. They are silky and magical.
And Kate has good skin. You can't tell. But
oh, thank you.
Must be the hot springs.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So get up early Sunday morning and go hit up the hot springs, and then hit up the Rainbow Room after, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's a great day right there.
Those are some great hacks. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for coming on the episode. It was really awesome. Like I said, your book, This Is Not LA, is one of my favorite LA books in my ever-growing library. So to share with our audience, where is the best place that they can find more about you, more about Knock Knock Books, and where to pick up the book, This Is Not LA?
Best place to find us is at knockknockstuff.com. And you probably have not heard of us, but you've seen our sticky notes and our pads and our humor books and our journals and so forth. So knockknockstuff.com. And then, many independent bookstores around Los Angeles. And then, of course, online. And like, as you found us on Amazon, where, much to our conflicted detriment, you can find anything.
You have no choice in that.
Yep. But they're a great customer for us.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thank you. Thanks again for coming on. And I recommend everyone go out there and pick up that book. It's a really unique book. And you've got some ammunition you can use for those annoying people who visit you and repeat these tiresome LA myths.
Thank you so much
for having us. This was such a treat.
Okay, talk to you again soon.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye. What's up, LA hackers? I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Life Hacks LA podcast, where we hack Los Angeles' greatest myths with the authors of the book This Is Not LA, Jen Billick and Kate Sullivan. They really gave us some great materials to fight back all the hate that goes on in this city, the greatest city in the world, the city you love and the city I love, Los Angeles, California. And, I'm a collector of Los Angeles books, and this is one of my favorites just because it's super unique and different than a typical Los Angeles book. So if you know someone else who loves LA like me, then maybe you can pick it up as a present, or maybe pick it up for yourself. And you can find it at knockknockstuff.com or just Google the book This Is Not LA. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, if you want to get your hands on LA's 10 greatest hacks, as always, you can download our free ebook, LA's 10 Best Hacks, at lifehacksla.com/10hacks. All right, take care.